Welcome to Powering Product Innovation, a podcast from Cognizant's Technology Business Unit, where we partner with industry experts to enable continued innovation in the technology industry.
Welcome to the next episode of Powering Product Innovation, brought to you by Cognizant's Technology Business Unit. Today, I'm pleased to have Prasad Sankaran join me to discuss key trends in software product engineering. Prasad is the Executive Vice President responsible for the software product engineering practice here at Cognizant. He brings a wealth of knowledge in this area, and I'm really looking forward to this discussion. Welcome, Prasad.
Thank you, Deb. I'm very excited to be here.
Great. Well, let's start by sharing a little bit more about your role here at Cognizant.
Yeah, absolutely, Deb. I have a couple of different roles. My primary role is I am the global lead of software and platform engineering, which is a group at Cognizant that does work around anything that relates to custom development. And if you look at how the world has changed over the last few years, we've moved from just being centric to large packages like an SAP or a Salesforce to where I would say it's the renaissance of custom engineering. So my group, which is called SPE, in short, for Software and Platform Engineering, is responsible for anything around custom development. So it's digital engineering, building new products. It's all about digital experience. So creating experiences for employees and clients and customers. It's all about application development and maintenance. So taking legacy systems and making sure that they are future-proof. And then very importantly, quality engineering and assurance. So making sure that you're able to test and make sure that these systems are fit for purpose. So all of this addresses every aspect of custom development. And so that is what I run on a day-to-day basis. That's my primary role. My secondary role is I'm also responsible for delivery excellence around everything that Cognizant delivers to our clients and customers. And I do that not just for my group, which is SPE, but for the other groups as well.
Great. Well, it sounds like a big job. And I know that role requires you to spend a lot of time with engineering leaders. And so what are you hearing as top of mind challenges for the engineering leaders today?
Yeah, great question. So I would say I spend a lot of time with engineering leaders across a variety of industries. And the big change that I've seen is that certain industries like banking and financial services were first to be affected by some of this change. But now I'm seeing that this change is broad-based. Living in Houston, I see the change happening even in sectors like oil and gas and energy broadly. It's certainly happening in comms and high tech. So the first thing I'd say is that technology needs to keep up to the speed of business. Business models are evolving really, really quickly everywhere. And so technology really has to keep up to that. The second is that in multiple industries, technology is actually the differentiator. It's the way for a business to have sustainable competitive advantage. So even in traditional areas like the oil field, technology is now playing a big part in being able to differentiate what you're able to do and bring to your customers. So the clients that I talk to on the technology side are really focused on keeping up with that. Not only keeping up with the speed of business, but being able to actually contribute to where business models can actually change. I think that's one. The second is, you know, it's all about experience. And, you know, companies like Apple and others have brought phenomenal experience to customers for what they use on a day-to-day basis in their personal lives. Now, the challenge is how do we keep up and provide that same experience to customers and employees in a work setting? So that is the second aspect. So the first is keeping up with speed of business. Second is providing the right rich set of experiences. And the third is tech debt. There's been so much build up in the past that a lot of our clients have a myriad of systems that they're working with. And so there's a ton of technology debt that they're sitting on. So they have to be able to operate it and they want to be able to modernize those systems. So how can you do all of that, run it, modernize it, make it fit for purpose? So these are, I would say, the top three things that I see technology leaders really working with.
Yeah, it's interesting, as you said, right? Technology has become a differentiator in every industry. It's no longer just in a tech customer. And I know you've spent your career in this whole field. And so other than the fact, some of the things you mentioned, customer experiences, modernization, keeping up with business, et cetera, But what are you seeing is really different today? Are those the issues, or are there other things that you're seeing in the underlying technology?
No, I think there are three or four issues. I'll start with the power of technology. So there are various new technologies that are coming at pace. So while we had the web and the internet really disrupt business, we had the arrival of the iPhone. That was a way in which that you could provide some of these changes to clients. Since then, we've had a variety of other technologies come, the latest of which is generative AI, which has completely changed what business looks like for many of our clients. In addition to that, you have to really focus on cybersecurity. It's always been important, but probably never as important as it has been today. So cybersecurity is an aspect that plays into what you do from a technology perspective. The third big topic that I always hear about is automation. How can you drive hyper-automation so that you're able to actually bring automation across the board and really tie all of those different pieces together? And the fourth, I would say, is sustainability. So while we're doing all of this, we need to be mindful of how we can create sustainable businesses and have a real focus around doing this mindfully and bringing it all together. So I would say myriads of different technologies, being able to do that in a safe and secure manner from a cybersecurity standpoint, being mindful of sustainability, and at the same time, knowing that you're not going to really have as much from a manual perspective. How do you drive that automation in every aspect of what you do?
Yeah, it's interesting. You mentioned AI, and clearly there isn't a conversation we have today that doesn't talk about the impact of AI and how Gen AI has brought that to the forefront. Are we seeing that actually improve productivity in the software development lifecycle as advertised?
Oh, absolutely. So when I look at the software development lifecycle, actually, I take a step back. There's two parts. So there's the SDLC on the software development lifecycle, which is all about going from design to code to test to deploy. And once the code is deployed into production, then there's the other part of the house, which is all about post-production. How do you support it? Whether it's infrastructure or applications, how do you support these applications? AI has been prevalent on what I would say the right side, which is the post-production side with AI ops, and we can talk about that. But what has changed with generative AI is that the left side, which is the system development lifecycle itself, has been completely changed. With generative AI, with various tools like various code companions and co-pilots, as some companies call them, you're able to actually have a companion that's able to help you right from the design to the deploy part of what you do in software development. And in many cases, we've seen 30-40% productivity. It all depends on the use case. It depends on the level of experience that the programmer has. It also depends on how much training you give them, you know, to get ready for it. The other aspect that is really important is what we're able to do from a standpoint of modernizing code bases, something that you couldn't do as easily. But now with these LLMs, you're able to take a code base that is, say, written largely in COBOL and then upgrade it to a completely different language and get a lot of that work done for you. And then once you have the human in the loop, really cuts the amount of effort that you need. So short answer to your question is yes. I mean, that's significant. And I think what we have to bear in mind, Deb, is this is still early days. We're just barely a year into the development of some of these co-pilots, and the pace of development is just astounding. I look at the hyperscalers and a lot of these other companies that are putting a lot of effort and capital into this. And I'm expecting that over the next 2 to 3 to 4 years, we're going to see some massive improvements in that space that will really change the SDLC as we see it.
Yeah, it sounds like hyper innovation that we're going to experience in the years to come. You mentioned something interesting in that topic in terms of the software developers really getting the benefits of all of this. And you mentioned training. Can you expand a little bit more on what organizations should be thinking about in terms of the readiness of their employees?
Yeah, absolutely. So I would say that life as a developer for all of us has changed. I don't see a future where you're just going to be a developer on your own. You're always going to be a developer with a companion. So there's, in some cases, the companion is going to do more of the work with a human in the loop, just taking a look at what the machine has produced and being able to verify and have the human in the loop. In other cases, it's going to be where the developer is doing more of the work, but being assisted by the companion. Now, in order to do that, I mean, these are tools at the end of the day. And the best way for us to be able to use the tool is to understand the power of the tool. And therefore, what companies will have to do, this is both for clients as well as for us, companies like Cognizant that are technology service providers, is how do you enable your developers? So when I look at a pyramid of developers, you have junior developers who study computer science or engineering and certainly other disciplines, and then they come in with that level of training and we tend to train them, but they tend to be junior developers. Then you have people in the middle of the pyramid who have, you know, 5 to 6 years of experience. And then you have at the top of the pyramid, people who have significant experience. All of them will benefit from these co-pilots and companions. The amount of and the type of training is going to differ. But at Cognizant, we are doing that at scale. So just within software and platform engineering, I would say that we've got almost 40 to 50% of our people already trained up in the use of various co-pilots. And for that, there's ways in which you're able to prompt a co-pilot, the ways in which you're able to use existing libraries of code, et cetera. So that is what ultimately drives the productivity that you can get. It's not just putting a co-pilot next to a developer.
Yeah, that's interesting. The investment that we've made in terms of bringing up that skill set required for this new generation of software development. Can we make this a little real? What real world examples do we have about how that's delivered benefits to clients?
Yeah, let me give you some examples. First of all, we have a development platform that we call FlowSource, and I can talk about that in more detail. But what FlowSource does is it provides a development workbench for the full stack engineer. And below that, you can plug in various co-pilots, and you know, I can get into the details later. But what we're able to do at clients is, and I was at an insurer just yesterday talking with the CIO, what we're able to do in a very organized and deliberate manner is we're able to show them what is the current productivity of their teams, whether it's their internal teams or teams that they get from other service providers. We're able to baseline the level of productivity that they're getting. After that, once we have teams now that are infused with co-pilots or companions, we're able to show them, and again, I'll caveat it by saying these are teams that truly understand how to use these tools, these co-pilots and companions. Then we're able to run them in parallel and then show how now this new team, which is a pod of developers and testers, is now functioning at 30% or 40% higher productivity, which means that they're able to get to 30, 40% more work or drain down 30, 40% of the backlog quicker than the other team is able to do. So there's multiple things that it does. Number one, you're able to do more. So you're able to do more in the same amount of time. So it's not just a cost saving. It's really what it means to our clients and our CIOs out there is that they always have a backlog and they're never really able to get to a lot of the backlog. What this does now is you're able to get to that 30, 40% extra of the backlog that you couldn't do before. So for the same amount of money and investment and discretionary spend, you're able to get more done. That's number one. Number two is the speed to market. You're able to get some of these features and functions out there much quicker. And the third is, and this is something that I've heard from Satya Nadella at Microsoft and from so many other people, and we've seen that internally as well, it has changed the quality of life of a developer because the developer is now able to hand off a lot of mundane tasks to the co-pilot around things like, go ahead and document my code. It's not something that was the most exciting job that a developer ever had, but now it's able to take a look at the code and it's able to put in the comments and so on. So a lot of mundane tasks are taken out. So the developer now has the true joy of problem solving and working with the machine to get it done.
Yeah, it's great. A couple of things really resonated with me. I think the speed to market, as you said, technology has become the differentiator. So that really gives companies that really embrace this the opportunity to get the speed to market. But I also love the fact that we talk so much about how AI is going to displace jobs. And what you've just shared is really important that it's actually making jobs more meaningful.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think in multiple ways, it's going to make jobs and the quality of life better. Just from my perspective, being the lead of software and platform engineering, it just changes the day-to-day life of our developers. But in addition to that, it changes experiences. We're able to bring bigger and better experiences to clients as well as employees. And then the third is really new products and services that we're able to look at.
Quickly deploy. Yeah. Now, I know one of the areas of AI that you're very passionate about is responsible AI. So what does that mean to you, and how should engineering professionals be thinking about it?
Yeah, the responsible AI is a big topic, and it's something that Cognizant is trying to be a leading voice around. It's something that I was able to talk about at Davos at the World Economic Forum earlier this year, and it's something that I participate on throughout the year. Because to me, for us to really benefit from AI, and particularly generative AI, we need scale. We need scale in the enterprise. I mean, we have a lot of pilots, but we need to take them to production grade, enterprise grade rollouts. So once you start having that level of rollout, that's when you start seeing the growth. But you're not going to have that without trust. So unless people trust what's happening within AI, and particularly generative AI, they're not going to be ready for those large scale rollouts. So for us to have growth, for us to have meaningful results at a large scale for AI, you need to have trust at the end of the day. And to have trust, you have to show how that trust is being built. And therefore, you need to have responsible AI. How do we get to that point? How do we get responsible AI going? There's multiple things. One is you have to make sure that the AI is being fair. You want to make sure that the AI is being transparent. You want to make sure that your data is actually being used in the right manner. You want to make sure that the right equality is being engendered throughout the process. So for all of these things, we've come up with various guardrails that we're able to use. We've actually built a platform that we call Neuro AI, which is able to look at a lot of these factors to make sure that we have traceability, we have transparency, we understand where the data is coming from, et cetera, so that we can help our clients build AI and generative AI systems in a safe and responsible manner. And then therefore show the users that this is how it's been built. These are how the results are coming out. And explainability, I think, is the biggest part of it. And if you're able to do that, then that starts to build the trust. And the trust then leads to more systems being built. Again, I go back to my conversation yesterday with the insurance CIO. And that exact point came up. We suggested a system. And they said, look, we are going to put it out on our enterprise web application. And how do I know that we can trust it? Because this is a very important business that you don't want to lose our users' trust. So we had to walk them through the guardrails that have been built, et cetera. So that is exactly how you scale it. So I think the responsible AI has two aspects to it. It's the right thing to do, but it's also, I think, very important for us to be able to take that to an enterprise level and drive growth.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of discussion, obviously, about making sure that AI is responsible, is not creating societal issues. So important factor for all the engineering leaders to be thinking about. Does that also play into the world of cybersecurity? Because you mentioned that earlier.
Yeah, absolutely. So cybersecurity always has been very important. But now, as we start using various LLMs and various other co-pilots, et cetera, it's very important for us to make sure that developers are being able to use these tools in a safe and secure manner. We have to make sure that as we bring some of these tools into certain client environments, we're able to do that in such a way that it safeguards access, et cetera. So cybersecurity, if anything, has become an even more important topic in the world of generative AI.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you've mentioned a couple of platforms. And so obviously your team not only is helping companies to build their platforms and their technology and software products, but we're also investing in building platforms. You mentioned FlowSource and Neuro AI as examples. Tell us a little bit more about the motivation for building these offerings and what it does to help clients.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have four platforms that we've built over the last year. The first is Neuro IT Operations, which runs the operations side of the house, whether it is around infrastructure or applications. We built a platform called SkyGrade, which is all about how you can help clients migrate to the cloud, modernize their applications in the cloud, and also make sure that you're running your applications in the cloud in a manner that is profitable for you, because cloud costs can just be a runaway situation, and there have been many stories around that. So we built the SkyGrade platform to enable that, because cloud at the end of the day is going to be the platform that drives innovation. And if you want to adopt areas like generative AI, you have to really be on the cloud. So that's the second platform. The third platform that we built is Neuro AI, which is a platform that allows you to use all aspects of AI in a safe and secure manner. So if you could be using multiple LLMs, you could be using different data sources, and it addresses all of the points I mentioned around responsible AI. And the fourth and the most recent of our platforms is what we call FlowSource. And FlowSource is the development platform. So it works in tandem with Neuro IT Operations, which is the run side. FlowSource allows the developer now to use co-pilots and companions in a safe and secure manner, but allows traceability, it allows benchmarking. It's a way in which we can show our clients, this is where you've started, this is what you're getting by way of productivity. And in addition to that, it does a bunch of other things. Make sure that the right quality checks are there, make sure that the right security checks are there, et cetera. So these are the four platforms. Now, why did we do this? We did this for a couple of different reasons. We want to be able to provide outcome-based services to our clients. We want to be able to provide managed services to our clients. And in order to provide any kind of service of that nature, you have to be able to have an underlying platform that is able to drive it for them. And in doing that, when we started these platforms, we decided we had to come up with a platform philosophy. So Cognizant's platform philosophy. And that is, we look at building the control plane that drives these services for our clients. But underpinning that, or sitting under the platform, is not only Cognizant IP, where it makes sense, particularly in vertical spaces where we have a lot of experience, like in health and life sciences and banking, et cetera, and where there's a gap in the market. But where there is technology out there, for example, if it's around observability or if it's around AI ops, then we go ahead and use best of breed products and we plug and play. And most of these are SaaS products that clients only have to pay for the actual usage. And so we have this whole philosophy around how we build platforms. But at the end of the day, it is for us to be able to drive outcomes for our clients, whether it's technology outcomes or business outcomes. Now, we continue to work in T&M models where we provide pods of developers and testers who are skilled. But for us to be able to actually drive business and technology outcomes and actually show what they are by baselining and showing month on month and year on year productivity, we need these platforms to do so.
Yeah, the outcome models, I think, are really important because then customers know what they're getting. They know what they're going to get for the investment that they make in our software engineering capabilities.
Absolutely. That is something that clients always talk to us about, which is they know where they're starting, but how are we able to translate that for them around what they're getting savings-wise on a regular manner? Whether it's a business outcome, so it could be for an insurer, how are we able to reduce the number of claims they're getting and tie that back to what we are doing on our platforms? Or it could be something that is technical, which is reducing the number of defects that you're seeing going into production.
Great. Terrific. Let's just dive a little bit further into some of these platforms. And you mentioned something that was interesting in terms of bringing together best of breed SaaS applications. So it sounds like we can help aggregate that landscape of all of these different applications that fit within the software lifecycle.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll just use one example. When we look at what we're doing in Neuro IT Operations, the real mission statement behind building that platform is to take a look at the run platforms that our clients have or the run estates that our clients have, which have infrastructure as well as applications, and being able to automate them or hyper-automate them. And really the ideal state is that you want absolutely zero manual effort. So for you to be able to actually triage anything in an autonomous manner. So when I look at something like that, there are really four components to it. The first is around observability, being able to truly understand what incidents you have, where you might see an incident in one manner and you might see an incident in a different manner, but the root cause is the same. How are you able to really figure out what are the true nature of problem that is causing these incidents? So that's one. The second is being able to actually apply that through what we call AI ops, which actually helps you to figure out, you know, what are these true and unique incidents. Then using ITSM, and there are companies out there like ServiceNow that provide it, for you to actually take these service requests and house them within your central database. And then the most important part is for you to be able to triage it, maybe manually, but then apply the fix so that the next time that incident is triggered, you don't need the human anymore. The system automatically figures out what the fix is and applies it. So now you're in a virtuous cycle where every time a fix comes in or an incident comes in, the system is going to look for a fix if it's there. If it's not there, it's going to get an SRE or a developer to come in and create the answer to it. But the next thing that the SRE is going to do, which is a site reliability engineer, is going to do is he or she is going to then apply that into the system. So the next time it happens, you don't need the human coming in again. So now you're in the cycle to where everything you know already has an automated fix. But if new problems start to come up because of new features, we are constantly adding new features, you keep getting into that cycle. So that is an example of a platform that we're able to deploy at our clients to address not only infrastructure defects they might have or application defects and drive down the amount of manual effort. So if a client is spending, say, $50 million today on a system that they're running, which is largely manual, they should be able to progressively drive that cost down and just have a super skilled team that's there maintaining the system, but also building in the fixes that don't exist today.
Yeah, it's interesting. It sounds like it's not only productivity, as you've stated here for the team, but also it is giving the customers ability to have a more reliable infrastructure. So the end users actually benefit as well by having that reliability.
Oh, absolutely. I think you hit the nail on the head there. Completely is reliability. Being able to make sure that, A, these systems are up and they're completely reliable, because technology, again, is a sustainable competitive advantage in many industries. So the more reliable you can have the systems be and the more features that you can add quickly and not be able to be affected by any kind of downtime is a significant differentiator in these areas for our clients.
Yeah, certainly. And certainly for mission critical applications, it's a must have. I'm going to take a few minutes and dive a little bit more into some of the other platforms, because I think that these are real value adds that your team has brought to the market. And so let's talk a little bit more about SkyGrade. In one of our podcast series, we did have one of the consultants from Cognizant talk about cloud FinOps and the importance of really managing the costs associated with cloud applications. What does SkyGrade bring to the market that customers don't have on their own?
Sure. So yeah, Deb, on SkyGrade, when we look at clients, typically there are clients who still haven't got onto the cloud, but that's a small number, but we still do have discussions on cloud adoption. But for the most part, when I look at clients, they are in the public cloud. They are sometimes in more than one public cloud. So they've started with one hyperscaler and typically have a second or maybe all three. In addition to that, within their own internal systems, they're using cloud-like capabilities. So they have hyper-converged infrastructure and they actually have private clouds that they build internally. And this is because some of our clients are regulated industries like health and banking, where some features have to remain within the company and they're not able to take the data out to a hyperscaler. So long story short, they're using clouds. So it's a hybrid multi-cloud world where you're using public clouds as well as private clouds. So in order for any client to really use the cloud effectively, and cloud is basically the infrastructure that's going to drive innovation. So when you look at generative AI, you look at all of these new features that are coming out, this is easiest and actually, the only way to really consume them is through these hyperscalers and these cloud platforms. So SkyGrade does four things for you. The first is it helps you to get onto the cloud, which is set up your landing zones, set up your infrastructure in the correct manner. And this is a super important area. A lot of clients think it's all about just migration, about lift and shift. It really is not, because before you move your data and your applications, you have to make sure that your system is fit for purpose. You want to make sure that you've architected your landing zone in the cloud in the right manner. So SkyGrade automatically does that for you. The second is once you're in the cloud, you want to be able to run effectively in the cloud. So making sure that you're doing all the right checks, SkyGrade does that for you. The third thing that SkyGrade does for you is it automatically looks at different workloads that you're bringing and migrating, like different VMs or virtual machines, and sees if there are opportunities for you to make them more cloud native. So are there ways for you to upgrade, this is without human intervention, various virtual machines or VMs into microservices which are containerized. So now that they are running on containers, you're able to take advantage of the auto-scaling that the cloud provides, which means that you can really scale up to almost an infinite level that a virtual machine cannot. That's just the automatic aspect of it. In addition to that, it also identifies code that's in VMs that are candidates, but you require some level of intervention. So you're probably going to do some code remediation and then containerize those applications. So bottom line is it helps you to automatically and through a programmatic manner, figure out how to really use the power of the cloud, not just lift and shift, but actually use the power of the cloud. And the last thing and very important area is FinOps. So cloud costs can be runaway costs. What our system does for you and SkyGrade does for you is it shows you how you're using your various clouds. It's going to show you what things are costing to run. It's going to suggest ways in which to run certain applications that don't need to run in a certain format. It's going to show you which cloud is actually more cost efficient for you. And therefore, you can really use your multi-cloud in the right manner. And all of this is done with the right level of security because there's what's called a shared responsibility model that any hyperscaler expects you to follow. So there's a certain level of responsibility and security you are expected to have within the cloud. And there's a certain aspect that they provide. And SkyGrade is able to enforce that as well. So just to summarize, what it does for you is it allows you to, in the right manner, move onto the cloud. Therefore, set up your environment and migrate onto the cloud. It's able to help you manage your resources on the cloud. It is able to help you modernize by moving you from VMs to containers and really use the power of being cloud native. And finally, it's going to help you do this in a secure manner, but also make sure that you're able to control your cloud costs, which has been a big problem, even while providing big advantages of what the cloud does. And at the end of the day, if you're able to do all of that, you're on the cloud, that is the innovation platform, your data is in the right place, and then you can start using aspects like generative AI and really unlocking that next frontier of innovation.
Great. You know, it's interesting on the FinOps side, the customers I deal with on a day-to-day basis are SaaS clients. So most of those were born in the cloud. Will the FinOps portion of SkyGrade really help them in the challenges that they have in managing their costs?
Yeah, it depends on how you're using. Even with SaaS platforms, there are various features and functions that you need and don't need. So SkyGrade is going to help you figure out what aspects you're using and what you don't need to use from a SaaS perspective. It depends, again, on a SaaS platform. If it's a single function SaaS platform, then it's fairly transparent. But in many cases, with many of the companies that we work with, there are multiple functions that you turn on which you don't really need to use, and that's going to help them. In addition to that, there's all the applications that you've moved. And in some cases, the application is actually costing you more to run on the cloud than it was to run on-prem. So it allows you to at least identify them and then figure it out. So it's a journey, but it's able to really help you understand what your total cost of operation is in the cloud.
Great. Well, we've explored a number of topics today. We opened up by talking about how technology is a differentiation and innovation is moving at hyperspeed. We talked about some of the issues and challenges and opportunities that engineering leaders need to think about. We talked about AI and responsible AI, which every conversation has to include these days. And we've talked about the investments that we've made here at Cognizant to build platforms that help accelerate all of these benefits for our clients. So with all of that as a backdrop, what haven't we covered that you think is important? And please just share your final thoughts.
I think we covered a lot over the last few minutes, but I think what we haven't covered, I didn't talk about a little bit, is data. And then I'll come to some of my final points. So data is a more important topic today than probably ever before because generative AI has kind of unlocked that point. So clients are actually sitting on a whole different set of data, which is sitting in legacy systems. So I think clients are understanding that they are actually sitting on a lot of important data that they can unlock a lot of insights, and generative AI is going to help them unlock that. But in order for them to do that, they have to be able to take these legacy systems and these different data stores and figure out how to have the right foundation in place from a data perspective. So I think that's very important. And I think companies like Cognizant, where we have many years of understanding how banks work or how insurers work and where the data is sitting, and being able to bring it in the right sort of data foundation for our clients is going to be very important for them to really unlock the power of generative AI. And I think clients are starting to see that. And we're also starting to see that we're getting more involved in helping them with that. And of course, using the cloud as a foundation for that. And I would say, just to wrap up, we're in a super exciting time. Technology gets better and better and is a very exciting area to work in. But I cannot think of a time which is as exciting over the last couple of decades that I worked in technology. It's progressively gotten better. I would say the tools and platforms make it much easier for people to work on. Even citizen developers have a role to play. There are low-code, no-code platforms. It's not that hard to use LLMs as well as different code companions if you want to be able to code. All of this is just making it easier for you to participate within technology. And I think what we're going to see is that the pace of change is going to really accelerate over the next 2 to 3 years. And I think this is going to develop a whole bunch of different products and services that were not imagined before. And it's going to really revolutionize our working life, but also all of our personal life. So I love to be part of that, and working at a company like Cognizant, being part of the fabric that is able to really bring that change is super exciting for all of us.
Yeah, it is definitely an exciting time. We've been through several technology innovations. If you go back to the e-business era and cloud and SaaS, and this one does seem to be like the biggest one we've seen, at least in my lifetime. So exciting times.
Yeah, absolutely.
Great. Well, thank you so much for your time today. It was a pleasure to speak with you, but also for our audience, have the benefit of your experience and your knowledge. And I'm sure they'll get a lot of great takeaways. So thanks again, Prasad.
Sure. Thank you, Deb. Love doing this.
Thank you to our guest, Prasad. It was great to get his insight on the importance of software product engineering in today's business environment, and how new technologies like AI and cloud are impacting the product development lifecycle. And thank you all for joining us in this edition of Powering Product Innovation from Cognizant. If you've enjoyed the show, please be sure to rate us, leave us a review, and hit that subscribe button so you never miss an episode. I'm Deborah Eastman, and thank you for listening.